Okay.
And the next one is a fairly straightforward tutorial in which I was asked to write an essay on the hypothalamus, and I don't know if there's anything particularly notable, but I fulfilled my obligation and wrote it. Then we go on to other things that are obviously physiological. The next package that we came across is again a tutorial with David Witteridge. What do you understand by localization of function in the cerebral cortex? A very interesting topic, and I even remember thinking how interesting it was to this day, as most observers of the central nervous system, I'm sure, would agree. The next passage is really should probably have been looked at in relation to the pain one, because it's talking of, it's just notes on Adrian's work on sensory changes in single cutaneous nerve fibers. No, it's in relation to nerve conduction, which I'd been interested in. These are just notes. There are not any particular insights from me. I'm just making notes on what I was reading. This next package is something that I wouldn't have any idea how to answer now. It's what differences in postural activity are shown in the thalamic and decerebrate animal. Evidently at the time I thought I knew something about it, because I started off by an analysis of posture, followed by a consideration of the various centres and influences removed on decerebration, and in making a thalamic preparation enable us well to see the differences in these two animals as regards postural activity. It sounds very learned, but I don't think it was. What are the chemical factors controlling respiration, and what are their modes of action? And it's not a very long tutorial, as it were. I have, I think, about 14 pages or thereabout, which for me was fairly short. And then there are a collection of the notes that were taken to try to understand that. And the last one in this series is evidently an essay. It's called Essay 3, so I presume there are some Essay 1 and 2, but I haven't been able to find them, so they probably don't exist anymore. But the essay 3 was again an essay, almost certainly for Witteridge. It has been found clinically that there is a limit to the rate of infusion with blood of normal and exsanguineous patients. What experiments would you perform to elucidate this point? Interesting topic, because it actually has some relevance to my own history. I had a kidney stone, a very small one at one time, and had the usual procedures. And then after the procedure, I was given infusion of saline, but the people who set up the infusion set it up at a very high rate, which my wife noticed and just commented on. About halfway through the night then, I had quite severe problems of cardiac failure as a result of over infusion rate of saline into a person, which can happen even if the person is completely well and normal. If you infuse too fast, you cause trouble, and that's what this essay was about. Continuing these general topics, there was a weekly tutorial on the anterior lobe of the pituitary, and no particular question asked in this case, but it was the interaction of the hypothalamus and the pituitary. It starts off with this sentence that owing to the close interrelation of the hypothalamus and neighbouring brain tissues with the pituitary, the interpretation of results of tumours, etc., of the hypothalamus is of the hypothesis is often difficult, etc., etc. But anyway, that's what I was writing about. This is one of the rather later level layers of the packages that we've uncovered. An interesting topic here, physiology again. How far has the study of simplified systems advanced our ideas of the nature of synaptic transmission in the central nervous system? Very interesting, because at that time people hadn't resolved the question of whether it was electrical or chemical, and of course it's a combination of both, but it was a very interesting topic to me at the time, because as I mentioned elsewhere, I was thinking of the possibility of doing a later work on the central nervous system, and synapses would have been quite interesting in that area. So what have we got now? We've got this lot here. This next group of tutorial essays takes off after essay 3. That we've got now essay 4, 5, 6 and 7 and so on. So essay 4 was, what are the mechanisms which maintain the blood pressure in the human being at a constant level? What cardiovascular adaptations are there associated with changes in posture? It's interesting because, to me now, because quite a lot of my work in the past 10, 15 years has been related to the genetic factors which alter blood pressure. And so this is some of the material that, that in my earlier training gave me the background to understand blood pressure. So essay 4 is then on the mechanism which maintain blood pressure constant. And essay 5 is not all that dissimilar topic, but what important methods have been used to investigate the coordination of the heartbeat. So this is more emphasizing for me to understand what methods have been used. And I start off by saying they may be arranged in several groups. methods involving pressure changes, investigations of the sound, electrical changes in the heart, etc. So that was an attempt to learn about what methods have been used. Essay number 6 is, what are the variations of blood pressure which occur in the pulmonary circuit compatible with health and life? So it's thinking about the pulmonary circulation, and that still is a very difficult topic for physiologists and physicians to control the pulmonary blood pressure. And then here we're talking about the heart and the brain and how their circulations are maintained, because essay number 8 is, what are the factors which normally control the cerebral and coronary circulations? And it starts off with saying, although the changes in the cerebral and coronary circulations, which are observed under different conditions, are often similar, they are not primarily interconnected. It's therefore convenient to treat the two separately. I don't know whether I would agree with that anymore, but that's how it started off. The next package that I have in front of me is just notes on the annual review of biochemistry in 1945 by Kalkar, on talking about phosphate compounds and enzymes in carbohydrate metabolism. And that was really, and there's a whole package of material here, and it really is the material that was behind my being able to write the tutorial which led to my first paper, or my authorship on a paper by Sandy Oxen that I've mentioned several times. I have here a physiology tutorial which was on the relation of the cortex and thalamus to sensation, and a fairly long dissertation on this topic goes on for about something like 20 pages or thereabout. Fairly straightforward tutorial. But in the same package, there is a couple of pages that I have some difficulty in understanding when they were done, because it's headed anatomy, and with my name on the right-hand side, which usually means that it's a tutorial, and yet it's discussing the relationship of the thalamus to sensory experiences, and yes, it's called anatomy rather than physiology. So I imagine it was also with Witteridge, but it's just labelled anatomy because that's the particular topic. There are only 4 pages, but quite nice pages with some pretty coloured crayon drawings that I rather like even now. So it's an interesting package. Then in the same package, there are a very considerable number of notes on various things that I read in relation to these topics. That'll do, Jenny. That's... there are two tutorials still on the topic that we've seen before on nerve conduction. One is on the evidence of the core conductor hypothesis and or the propagation of the nervous impulse by eddy currents. So this was when people were beginning to understand nerve conduction. I don't remember whether the importance of nodes was known at that time or not, but it's a relation to nerve conduction, a topic that was interesting to me when I wrote about it. The second one on the same general topic is a tutorial on the facts and theories relating to the ionic composition of nerve axoplasm, the resting potential, the nerve membrane, and action potential, with a note on the myelin sheath. So it's written as if it was more as if it was notes, but it's in the format that I associate with giving it as a tutorial. Some notes here in relation to nerve conduction, I'm sure that talking about the unit for sensory reception in the cornea. And it's talking about Adrian's technique for isolating afferent fibres and sense organs attached, etc., etc. Rather difficult topic, I'm sure. I don't know, remember much about it. And they're just notes. There is a tutorial here that's on the relation of the pyramidal and extrapyramidal systems to control the voluntary movement and the lower motor neuron. I'm quite fascinated to see the sophistication of topics that one was expected to be able to write about as a student. I don't know how deep the understanding was, but surely the tutors made you try hard because they asked a difficult question. More notes on the hypothalamus here. The hypothalamus, just notes from a German article, Ergebnisse der Physiologie. I'm sure that's not the right pronunciation, but that's what it is. The anatomy and connections and physiology of the hypothalamus. The next series of papers or notes are obviously from the time when I was doing my second degree after taking the animal physiology course and being exposed to Sandy Oxton and his ideas. I decided that I should take a second degree in chemistry to make sure that I was not handicapped by a failure to understand chemical things. And I joined the course in the second and third year of chemistry and took the first part of the chemical examinations at the end of that time. I never did hear how I went, how well I did in those exams. I think it probably was like something that happened to Sandy Ogston, a rather enjoyable account he gave of the idiosyncrasies of the Oxford system, because he took 2 degrees. He did the chemistry first and then physiology second, whereas I did physiology first and chemistry second. And after he did the first degree in physiology and got a, I'm sorry, Sandy Oxton did the first degree in chemistry and got first class honours, and then took the second degree in physiology. And after he'd completed the exam, he asked the examiners how he'd done, whether he'd got to the standard needed for first class honours. And they said, "Oh, Oxton, we didn't bother to read your exam. We knew that you couldn't get a standing from the exam." And so he never did find out how he went on. And I think probably the same thing happened to me, except in the reverse order, that after getting my honours degree, which had to be judges first class, second class, etc., the chemistry degree couldn't be graded in that way, and so was only read very cursorily by the examiners. I never did hear how I did. But anyway, the next series of packages are related to being taught chemistry. So the first one in this group is on the notes on plant sugars and polymerized compounds from sugars, starch and the like. And it turned out that later on, using starch was a very important part of my starch gels was a very important part of my later work. But there is a package on plant sugars and polymerized compounds, and then one package in which evidently a tutorial in this case, because it's headed in the usual way, chemistry, and Smithy's on the right. The methods of synthesis, a pyrrole, pyridine, quinoline, etc., etc. And so it goes. A package also on some simple alkaloids and related compounds. One on account of some flower pigments. Interestingly enough, because that was probably related to what my organic chemistry professor, whose name just escaped me for the moment, was famous for, because he worked out a lot of the structures of the flower pigments. He was quite famous. Some notes on the chemistry that was being taught at 1931 meeting of the British Association. And Bierum on solubilities and iron solvent forces. And somewhere else in this collection we've had a tutorial that I wrote on solubilities. That was a topic of some interest to me. A bunch of notes on aromatic chemistry, aromatic character of homocyclics. Talking about benzene ring, of course, with the 6 carbons and the 4-carbon structure with a question mark, not known. I think that's been fairly recently developed with 4 carbon atoms, and very highly explosive, the form that's been used, a modern explosive. Interesting package. I'd like to read it again. A simple one on copper, silver and gold. one on the alkaline earth metals, beryllium, magnesium, calcium, strontium, etc. When I did the chemistry course, I was rather careful to emphasize the substances that I was likely to meet in biology. So I, the calcium, etc., were magnesium, were all compounds, were all elements that occur in nature. But I didn't spend much time on the rare earths, etc., because I didn't realize, of course, how important they would be in other contexts as they now are. A tutorial on the halogens, one on alpha amino acids, another on the terpenes. Actually, I think I got a question on the terpenes in the exams, if I remember correctly, and rather enjoyed answering it. Notes on cholesterol, vitamin B1. And that's entertaining because I think I forgot the structure of one of the vitamins and was asked by the one of the professors of biochemistry whether let me just try that again in the practical exam. In the biochemistry part of the of my physiology degree, one of the examiners who happened to be there was interested in whether I really did know the difference between two vitamins because I'd written the wrong formula. I'd written the right formula for one vitamin but labelled it with another vitamin's name, so I obviously didn't know which was which. And this I seem to remember vitamin B1 was one of those that I got wrong, and here is my notes on it. Sulfanilamides, very interesting, because here is amino sulfonamide. Of course, these sulfonamides were the first of the drugs that were developed that were antibacterial, or not developed, but discovered to be antibacterial. And my uncle died of boil infections before the sulfanilamides were available, and my sister, a year later, had highly infected tonsils, but the sulfonamides were then available, and she survived and lived to have a good life. Pyrimidines, purines and pyrimidines, a big, thick set of notes on them. Powell talking about the properties of matter, crystal structure determined by X-ray diffraction, another time when really there was X-ray diffraction was talked about, and written with some joy, as I remember, because the properties of matter was always a topic of great interest to me. Even in high school, we had a very good textbook on the properties of matter, which I could find because it was so delightful. Barrow, pages and pages of stuff from Barrow, but it won't all be from Barrow, but it's all on colloids. Pages and pages of it, maybe 30 or 40 pages on colloids. I don't remember who Barrow was or why I was particularly interested in him. So this must have been a whole bunch of things of that sort, because here's one headed just Irving, Physical Methods of Analysis, and even bound a little bit, so I must have enjoyed it. Conductivity titration, another topic. Wolfenden, applications of electromotive force measurement. And finally, a bunch of things all together just labelled Wisconsin Symposium, and it talks about various things in relation to more biochemical than chemical topics. Is that the last one?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the last one. Have we got something down anyway, Jenny? The last series of things are nothing to do with lecture notes or tutorials, but they still have some interest because they some of them are just the actual exam questions. For example, there's one on the Honor School of Natural Science, the final examination in general physical chemistry. So that was when I was taking my chemistry degree, 1948. It was on June 17th, my sister's birthday, 1948. And I must have been, 23 then. So there's one on general physical chemistry, one on practical organic chemistry, one on general organic chemistry, one on advanced organic chemistry, two on those, and one on advanced physical chemistry, advanced inorganic chemistry. So they had a lot of exams in relation to it. One on physiology, practical biochemistry, on the School of Natural Science, final examination, general inorganic chemistry, and final examination in practical inorganic chemistry. So quite interesting to be able to see what topics were being questioned in the exams and what type of exams were being set by the examiners. Let's stop it a moment here. I'll find one to talk about. An example of the question is, and when you had to answer five questions out of a total number of possible ones of eight, so you couldn't miss many of them. But I have here that the first one, which is, explain concisely how the second law of thermodynamics may be applied to obtain results of importance in physical chemistry. And it asks you to calculate the latent heat of fusion of benzene from various things that you're given. And I have a note here, 2,720 calories per mole was my answer. I don't know whether it was right or wrong, but that's the answer. There was one entertaining exam here that there is was not printed in the neat form of those honours one. It's just a typewritten exam for the Theodore Williams Scholarship examination. This is now July 1945, so that was when I was in doing physiology. And I still remember it, actually, because there were a list of eight questions, of which you had to answer four, or not more than four. Not more than four should be answered. And I evidently decided that, all right, then I'm not going to answer four. I'll answer three. So I answered three. And the one that I remember to this day is, compare the regenerative capacity of bone, nerve, and muscle. Actually, when I read the list of questions, I almost left the... This was a... I'll backtrack a little bit. The Theodore Williams Scholarship was, of course, an exam that would determine whether or not you were elected the Theodore Williams Scholar for the year. And it was an anatomy prize. But the professor of anatomy was Le Gros Clark, and he was really more you might say, more interested in cell biology than in anatomy as such. So his questions were not very anatomical in a sense. I remember that there was one student who knew anatomy backwards and forwards. He could tell you every nerve and every muscle and everything related to anatomy. And if it had been classical anatomy, he would definitely have got the prize. In fact, I won the prize because of Le Gros Clark's interpretation of anatomy, and I still remember my answer to the question number 3, which was compare the regenerative capacity of bone, nerve, and muscle, and I actually had quite a nice essay on it because I found they were much more comparable than one might think, and they're much dependent upon the preservation of the muscle and the tissue surrounding the muscle, or the membrane. I don't even remember it completely, but I do remember enjoying it. And anyway, I did get the prize. That could go in a package. Contained about 15 pages of notes on not on ordinary paper, but rather strange. Solubility of solids is what it starts with, and there's pages and pages of notes and equations and things that I don't even remember where they came from or in what relation they were accumulated, but there they are, a whole bunch of pages. We'll put that in one, Jenny. Pages and pages of it. Mm-hmm. What it is.
A lot of formulas.
Different sort of pen. A couple of pages looking as if I'm trying to work out the equations related to the passage of light through a prism. Looks quite neat and fairly sophisticated, but I don't know what it's about anymore.
Hi, Sheila.
We'll put them into water. A rather incomplete set of notes on the absorption diet, on the absorption through the in the gastric, pancreatic, and intestinal enzymes concerned with absorption of proteins, nitrogen balance, and so on. And talking about it, different substances that might be encountered. It must have been in relation to understanding diet. There are two, in a sense, manuals dating back to my postdoctoral time in Wisconsin. One of them is describing how to the procedures for using Model 38 of the Tiselius electrophoresis apparatus, which I used in some of the work in when I was in a postdoc in Wisconsin, and there's notes on the directions for manipulation of the machine. There's a manual, well, rather a set of notes prepared by. I know it is. It just says LGG and JWW. LGG, LJG was Lou Gosting, and JWW was Jack Williams. Lou Gosting was a young professor, and Jack Williams was my advisor as a postdoctoral fellow in Wisconsin. And there's a section on the optical methods for following electrophoresis or ultracentrifugation experiments. And then there is a set of my notes on various topics in talking about antibodies and quite a little bit on antibodies. And some rather impenetrable notes on completely impenetrable notes on the I can't even tell what they're on. It's so impenetrable at this point. They look very sophisticated. I leave them for what they were. And finally, my copies of my the abstract of my thesis, which is saved elsewhere. This work arose from observations made by Ogston and Johnson on the osmotic pressure of solutions of protein mixtures. They observed osmotic pressures up to 10% greater than those expected, but their method was not accurate enough, and so I made did my PhD on getting a more accurate method. Nobody ever used it, but I enjoyed developing the method. That's it, Jenny. I think that's it. Nothing more left here.